Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Now look with me this morning in our brief chapel at three parts to Paul's advice here in verse 58 for the in-between. First, I see the command of consistency. He says, be steadfast, be unmovable. The ability that God blesses the most is the ability of reliability, the ability of dependability. God loves youth conference. I'm convinced of that. I believe as God looked down the last few days at youth conference, I think even during the Q-tip event and the bubble wrap video and everything else that was crazy, I think God enjoyed it. And I think God loves to see thousands of teenagers gathered in one place being challenged to serve God. God loves youth conference. God loves Easter weekend. God loves these times where we plan a big event. But I'm afraid the harvest across the world today is wasting because of youth conference Christians. That is, people who get up for the big one. They get right with God for that big event. They get right with God because they want to serve God during some great open house or some great evangelistic outreach. But the harvest is wasting in between the big events. It is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. Most men will proclaim everyone his own goodness, but a faithful man, who can find? We love to talk about what we did during youth conference or what we did Resurrection Weekend or what we did on the big day or what we're going to do on Neighborhood Impact Weekend. We love to talk about that, but you know what God is looking for? He's just as interested in our relationship with Him the Monday after youth conference as He is what our relationship will be Neighborhood Impact Weekend. He wants us to have a consistency to our life. Most people fail in their Christian life because they stop being faithful. It's not that they're never right with God on a big day or never usable on those big times, but it's that consistency, that faithfulness that God is looking for. Peter reminds us of this in 1 Peter chapter 3 where he says, ye therefore, beloved, seeing you look for such things, beware lest ye being led away with the error of the wicked fall from your own steadfastness. It's so easy to be led away the Monday after youth conference. It's so easy to get out of the routines that God has commanded us to live within. I would guess that most of you probably expect to live another 40 years. I think most of our students here probably expect to live another 40 years. You plan to live into your 60s, into your 70s. Do you know that if you give out one tract a day for the next 40 years, you'll give away 14,600 tracts? Now again, we'll probably set some goals on how many doors we're going to knock for a Neighborhood Impact Weekend. And we ought to. We ought to say, man, I'm going to get 100, or man, I'm going to get 1,000, or you know, whatever the case is, I'm going to contact 300 homes and try to get some kids on the bus, and I'm going to try to get so many at my service or whatever, and that's great. But one tract a day for 40 years will cover a lot of people. If you knock 10 doors a week for the next 40 years, you'll knock on 20,800 doors. If you read 5 chapters a day in this book for the next 40 years, you'll read through the Bible 61 times. If you give $20 a week to missions over the next 40 years, you'll give $42,000 to missions. If you memorized 5 verses a week, less than one a day, for the next 40 years, you'll have memorized a third of the Bible, 10,400 verses. See, we like to think about those big numbers. We like to think about knocking a lot of doors. We like to think about giving a lot of money to missions. We like to think about memorizing the Bible. We like to think about that in the big numbers. But the truth is, God just says, hey, be steadfast. Be unmovable. A command to consistency. And yes, it's hard the Monday after youth conference to get all excited about chapel. And it's hard to get back into the classroom routine. And it's hard to be consistent. But that's what God is looking for. But secondly, I notice the challenge of continuation. He says, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. In other words, don't quit. There's always a natural low after a big event. It's always kind of a letdown. You know, it's fun to have youth conference. Don't have to go to class. We go to Six Flags. It's different. It's schedule upheaval. It's a lot of fun. We see kids getting saved. We see lives being changed, and it's exciting, and now it's over. And we're back to, oh, wow, this week we have classes like every day. Do you know the greatest temptations come after the greatest victories? You see it in sports. There was a little section of SportsCenter last night when I got home, and it was labeled Cy Young Troubles. And both Cy Young winners from last year's baseball season had horrible pitching days yesterday. You see, success oftentimes doesn't breed success. Oftentimes, success in sports, somebody makes a great player, somebody has a great season, and boy, the next year is that struggle for them. We see it in business. We see it in the Bible. Elijah calls down fire out of the sky to devour not only a sacrifice, but the wood on the sacrifice and the rocks that made up the altar and the water in the trenches. He saw a tremendous miracle of God, but immediately Jezebel sends word. I'm going to get you. And Elijah becomes discouraged. Elijah begins to have a little pity party. I think of Jesus, who heard, no doubt, the most wonderful words anybody could ever hear as he came out of the Jordan River upon his baptism, and a voice from heaven said, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased." We look forward to one day God saying to us, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." And for Jesus Christ, the very Son of God, to hear the Father say, "This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased," and immediately the Spirit drives him into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. Great victory, great temptation. I think of the early church coming off the day of Pentecost and 3,000 people being saved and baptized and added to the church. And the next chapter, 5,000 men are saved and baptized. And later in that chapter, multitudes of men and women being converted to Christ. What a highlight time in the day of the early church. And yet, Ananias and Sapphira. And immediately a problem enters into that church. And let me tell you something this morning, students. The devil's coming after you today. He doesn't rest after youth conference. We've got the challenge before us today of continuation, always abounding. No, we won't have to stay up as late this week, perhaps, to get it all done. And perhaps the schedule will be a little bit more normal. But don't take a vacation from God this week, because the devil's not taking a vacation from you. He's not happy about people getting saved here last week. He's not happy about some 20 people being saved in the service yesterday morning. He's not happy about those things. And he's going to step up the temptation. And so the challenge of continuation, we're to run with patience the race that is set before us. That word patience means endurance. Life is not a sprint. It's a marathon. Scott Hatchett, who is the director of Camp Joy in Whitewater, Wisconsin, was a young man that I met when he was about 8 or 9 years old. Scott later in life contacted a virus in his body, and the doctors tried everything to cure it, and nothing would cure it. And finally, one doctor said, "Scott, I believe if you started an intense exercise program, that it would help you recover from this virus. It would push the virus out of your body." And so Scott, who really wasn't athletic, never played any sports in school, had other interests, he began to run. He began to go for a run every day. I remember that summer being at the camp and talking with Scott, and he was running in these just casual shoes. I said, "Scott, you can't run in just any old shoe. You need a running shoe." And I went down and I bought him his first pair of running shoes. Scott runs ridiculously now. He goes for a 10-mile run in the morning just for kicks. I mean, it doesn't even affect him. He does it in about an hour. Scott doesn't run, well, he does run on the road some when he's just running for pleasure, when his son wants to ride his bike along with him. But Scott loves to run cross-country through the Kettle Moraine region there, which is just hiking trails. He runs sometimes all night. Recently, his wife was speaking at a ladies' retreat out of town, and his kids were farmed out to babysitters, and Scott had some free time. He said, "I wonder how far I could run in 12 hours. So for the next 12 hours, he ran. He's run 50-mile races, 100-mile races. I said, "Scott, how in the world do you do that? How do you run all night? How do you run for 12 hours? Don't you get tired? Doesn't your mind start playing tricks on you? Doesn't your mind start saying, 'Hey, stop'?" I said, "What do you do?" And without even batting an eye, he said, "I just tell myself, don't quit." And sometimes I think we're looking for something unique, something eye-shattering to keep us going in the ministry. But God is saying, don't quit. Just keep going. And yes, there's going to be some times of where it's going to be hard to endure. It's going to be hard to keep going. But what God is saying is here, keep going. Don't quit. And then we see, thirdly, the crown of confidence. "For as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." Why should we be consistent? Why should we continue in this race? Because there's confidence that one day there is a crown. "Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. Knowing therefore that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall receive of the Lord." Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. I'm glad Jesus Christ was there when I got saved. If he hadn't been there, I couldn't have gotten saved. And I'm thankful he was there at the beginning of the race, but guess what? He's there at the end. He's there at the finish line. Keep your eyes on him, the crown of confidence. The 1968 Summer Olympics was held in Mexico City. It was an Olympics sure to be remembered for a number of things. The athletes were particularly concerned, especially in track and field, about the altitudes of Mexico City. And many of the venues were going to require tremendous amounts of endurance because of the altitudes. It came time for the marathon, and the event started in the stadium, the Olympic Stadium there, as the athletes rounded the stadium track several times and then exited out of the stadium onto the streets of Mexico City for the majority of that race, entering back into the stadium for the last several laps so the crowd could once again enjoy the finish of that race. A man by the name of Mamo Walde of Ethiopia won that race in 2 hours and just a little bit under 30 minutes. Tremendously grueling race at those altitudes. Not a record time by any means, but a very well-run race. As other runners began to come in the stadium, of course, the crowd watched as the silver medal, the bronze medal was obtained, and other runners from various countries finished the race, and people applauded and then headed to the medal ceremony outside the stadium. But soon, someone alerted officials that there was still one runner yet to finish. It was now 4 hours and 30 minutes after the start of the race. But there was a runner now entering the stadium, staggering, weaving, as he'd made his way around that track, hardly at a speed above a walk, but still running. A man who, about a third of the way into that marathon, crashed with some other runners in the pack and fell and tore off the top of his knee and dislocated his shoulder. But he kept running. In fact, 18 runners in that Olympic marathon quit the race. But John Stephen Akwari kept running. As he began to stagger around those final laps inside that stadium, reporters began to make their way back in, and spectators began to hear about it, and they came back in. Others began to run with him around that track as he staggered to the finish line and finally fell across the tape. And immediately medical assistance came to his aid as his knee was badly injured, his shoulder dislocated, and one of the reporters stuck the microphone in his face and he said, "Why? Why? 18 runners quit the race. Why did you keep running?" And this Tanzanian runner said, "My country did not send me 5,000 miles to start this race. They sent me 5,000 miles to finish it." In 1983, Akwari was awarded the National Hero Medal of Honor in his country of Tanzania. He now lives with his wife and 6 children. He's 70 years old. He lives with his wife and 6 children in a hut made of tree trunks pasted together with mud. His family owns a small plot of land, and they grow corn. They sell some. The rest, they make a local porridge-like dish called ugali. His home is 7 kilometers from the nearest telephone, which is located in the village church. It was there that he received a phone call from Beijing, inviting him to the Chinese capital for the Olympics a few years back. When he arrived at those Olympics, the Chinese officials gave him a replica torch of the Olympic Games as a tribute to his achievements. He flew to China wearing a yellow, blue, and green sweater, the colors of his national flag. You know what's interesting to me? Beijing did not invite Mamo Walde to the Olympics in Beijing. He won the race in 1968. But they didn't invite him. They invited the guy who didn't quit. And maybe as you go through some of the big events, maybe you won't be as successful in your mind as somebody sitting next to you or somebody laboring along with you. But all God's asking you is to keep going, to be consistent, and to keep your eye on the crown, where one day God will say, "Well done,